Hey there, Eco Heroes. If you're a bit of a mindless consumer when you're out shopping and buying lots of nice new clothing and accessories for your wardrobe, well, this week we're going to change all that. Hopefully, we're going to turn you into more of a conscious consumer when it comes to fashion. I am super, super excited to bring my guest onto the show this week. I'm chatting with Melinda Tuwally, and she's the director of Endless, which is the new normal, and she's also the coordinator for Fashion Revolution Australia and New Zealand. Melinda advises brands and retailers on responsible business and supply chain strategy, social and environmental risks, communications, partnerships, and sourcing. Fashion Revolution is a global movement calling for greater transparency in the fashion industry, and Fashion Revolution Week, which we're going to chat about in this episode, runs from April the 24th to the 30th, 2017. In today's episode of Eco Chat, you're going to find out firsthand from Melinda what is wrong with the fashion industry. She's going to explain exactly what Fashion Revolution is and how it was established and what it's achieving. Melinda's also going to share some tips and strategies for how you can ecofy your wardrobe, including why it's really, really important that you understand who made your clothes. She's also going to share where she sees the fashion industry heading in the future and what she believes needs to change for it to become truly sustainable. And lastly, Melinda's also going to share where you can find more about Fashion Revolution and join the cause to help change the fashion industry. So without any more chat from me, let's dive in and chat with Melinda. Welcome to the Eco Chat podcast. I'm your host, Laura Trotter, and I'm here to show you how you can create an eco-ceptional life you love without compromising your lifestyle. Tune in for inspiring interviews with real-life eco heroes, plus my own theories, thoughts, and tips for sustainable living. I'm all about making green mainstream, and I'd love to help you on your eco journey. So let's get started. Melinda, let's just cut straight to the chase here. What is wrong with the fashion industry?
Well, the fashion industry has been largely, and I would say intentionally, quite opaque. And it's been very, very hard to find your way through and identify all of the players in the actual fashion supply chain. And visibility of the supply chain is incredibly important. The reason, you know, the Rana Plaza collapsed in Bangladesh in 2013 was because that garment facility on the top floor was sort of flying under the radar, as it were. And certainly after the collapse, brands that had their labels found in the rubble were also at pains to explain that they didn't realise, for some of them, that their clothes were being made in that facility, which, as we know now, is no longer an excuse. And brands must have visibility. But it just goes to show you how opaque the industry is. And if you can't see the issues, you have no ability to remediate or to mitigate the risks that those issues bring up. So, yeah, it's an incredibly complex industry with very, very deep supply chains that can involve hundreds of different suppliers. You know, over 100 hands can touch an item of clothing before you even get to it. From the cotton field right through to the packaging and assembly before it hits the boat. So yeah, very, very vast, very complex. Items of clothes can travel lots of different countries even before they get to you in all of their different stages. So it's a big job to unpack it. But that's one of the biggest issues. And I think also one of the biggest issues that now we're sort of seeing a real race to the bottom in terms of the dollar price that we pay for garments. And that leads to a lot of unsatisfactory conditions for workers, where the production turnaround times are incredibly reduced, the pressure for them to be able to deliver to this insatiable thirst for newness that the brands are sort of pushing on people results in, yeah, incredibly fast time turnarounds and, of course, not the greatest wages. Many workers are living on minimum wage or less because they're taking the hit. Those cheap prices that we pay at the till are not being paid, are not being passed along the value chain. So those at the very bottom of the supply chain, which are the workers, they're the ones that are paying the price for cheap fashion. So very lots of issues.
Right. It's interesting what you say about the packaging. And I mean, we just chatted briefly before we started this recording. Obviously, we both have run retail businesses in the past. And I did stock fashion clothes, organic, eco-friendly clothes for babies and children. And I still remember when my orders would arrive, well, not every brand, like the ones that really, like the Australian made brands didn't have, the clothes were just in the box and wrapped up in tissue paper, like from the small makers. But some of the brands, particularly from overseas, everything was packaged, every item of clothing individually packaged in boxes, and that the plastic waste was crazy. But I was told from the suppliers it had to be packaged like that just to keep the items clean. And I mean, that's just packaging. It's not even looking at, and these were ethical brands.
Not just the problem is if the factories don't package them and they do get damaged or there's mold or something by the time they deliver, then the brands are within their rights to say, we can't accept this. So they don't want to take the risk. They can't afford to take any stock back at those factories. So they're trying to protect themselves as much as possible. I think, you know, we're seeing now some development of some really great alternatives in packaging, and there's true biodegradable and bio-based plastic packaging that some of the most progressive brands in the sector are starting to use, which is really exciting. And the more they talk about that, the more they'll be able to influence the industry down the chain as well. So we always need those sort of leaders who are innovating to talk loudly about their innovations so that more brands can learn about that, because it's terribly tough being a micro or small enterprise and trying to innovate and come up with all of these solutions when really you're just, you know, struggling to keep a business alive. So yeah, there is development there, but certainly you can imagine the thousands of garments that get shipped and they're all in a single sleeve plastic packaging to alleviate any kind of risk that there could be damage to that garment, and then it gets rejected when it hits the shore. So
Totally appreciate that. So for our listeners today, could you explain what fashion revolution is and why it was established?
Yes, certainly. So fashion revolution is a global movement, and we're advocating for greater responsibility in the fashion sector. And by greater responsibility, we mean greater transparency, greater traceability, and more responsibility for the environmental impacts of the industry. It is one of the most polluting industries in the world after agriculture and oil. And the toll on raw materials is vast. You know, it takes a few thousand litres of water just to produce a cotton t-shirt, and over sort of 10,000 litres to produce a pair of jeans. And that's just looking at water usage, the carbon footprint, and of course the chemical pollution is really, really vast. And we've seen some incredibly sad results destruction of the environment, whether it's deforestation. A lot of people don't realise that trees go into our clothing as well, the drying up of large seas due to irrigation from cotton farming. So we talk about the environmental impacts, but of course fashion revolution was actually the result of the Rana Plaza collapse in Bangladesh. And in 2013, on April 24th, the building collapsed and over 1,100 people died. And more than 2,500 were left injured, some of them permanently so, who can never, ever work again. And that is what spurred our two founders, Carrie Summers and Ursula de Castro, who are both actually fashion designers in London, for them to say enough is enough. You know, this is the largest loss of life the fashion industry has ever seen in its history, which is a long one. It certainly wasn't the first accident and it hasn't been the last, but it was definitely preventable, and predictable. And so that's the sad truth of the accident. And so they decided we can't let this accident just go by as yet another one in the news that sort of, you know, fades away. And they wanted to really commemorate the lives that were lost and also create a new conversation around fashion and around what the issues are, but also at the same time celebrate all of the great brands and designers who are actually changing the industry for the better and have healthy supply chains and are focused on sustainability and labour rights and ethical sourcing. So they coined Fashion Revolution Day to be held on the anniversary of the collapse. And that first day was held in 2014 on the 1 year anniversary, and now it's Fashion Revolution Week. It's definitely growing due to the demand. It's a grassroots movement where volunteers around the world in over 90 countries, and it's really been quite phenomenal, the growth in both consumers wanting to know who made their clothes and also the brands and designers responding and wanting to tell their stories and wanting to show and work hard on their transparency. So we've seen we have a campaign every year on social media, but as well we've got hundreds, thousands of events that take place on the ground around the world. But the social media campaign asks people to turn an item of clothing inside out, to jump online, ask their favourite brand, you know, hashtag who made my clothes. And we see brands talking back to the consumers, and it's the first chance that people have really had that ability to reach, you know, huge, huge global businesses, global brands, show those brands that they actually do care, you know, where that pair of jeans came from. And in order to keep shopping that brand or to keep wearing them, they want to actually be proud. They want to know the story behind those clothes. And I think it's ended up being a really great tool to demonstrate to the industry how many people do care. Because certainly you can say they care, but, you know, data always counts. And so it's been great. We collect that data each year, and we show the growth of the movement, and we show the increase in the amount of people asking the question, so that we can demonstrate to the industry that they need to start working on this as a priority, not as a nice to have, that it's actually crucial now. We're in the day and age of transparency. You can't get away from it now with social media and the rise of online, you know, documentaries. YouTube has been phenomenal. Those stories that were always behind the curtain, now not only can they be told immediately through social media, but the spread, the awareness can spread immediately. You know, you see stories published today and they'll be global, you know, tomorrow. And I think that's something we've never seen before. So the dark realities of the industry, the sad realities of the industry are being communicated around the globe at a really fast pace. So, yeah, I think we've been able to foster a positive conversation and raise awareness positively. It's not a name and shame movement. Mm-hmm. We're not out to accuse brands of anything, but we're certainly trying to show them in a positive manner that it's really necessary to fix up the supply chain. And, you know, many of them have inherited an opaque, dark supply chain, and they're trying to, you know, fix it up. As well. Yeah.
Have you got some examples of some brands who have, I guess, like a good news story that's come out of Fashion Revolution Week, that maybe they've, you know, discovered some things about themselves and have and gone on to change the way that they manufacture their clothes?
Yeah, I mean, certainly we've had some great brands respond and who have published their factories. You know, G-Star have taken part in Fashion Revolution and been able to show people where their clothes are made. Nudie Denim has as well. Warehouse in the UK have all sort of taken part and taken photos of their producers. Marimekko, which is a beautiful European brand. And here in Australia, we've seen Jeans West profile some of their factory producers offshore and tell their stories. They've published their factory lists. Nobody Denim, which is a Melbourne brand who make in Melbourne. So a lot of the Australian brands are really proud to share their supply chains. Q. Yeah, it's you know, David Jones has taken part and shared some of the stories of their brands. So we've definitely, yeah, seen, and of course, a myriad of independent labels, you know, Moonbird, Sleepwear, lots of smaller labels, of course, as well, have been able to connect the producers and their supply chain with customers through the movement, which has been really nice for them to tell that story.
Great. So back to our listeners today then. So for those who are, I guess, looking to create more of a sustainable and an ethical wardrobe, what steps do you suggest that they start with in this area? And also, why is it important that they understand who made their clothes?
Well, it really comes down to your value system. You know, if you think it's important that people are treated fairly and with respect and dignity, and that they can also be able to afford to send their kids to school or to have urgent medical care if they need to, and just to earn a basic wage so that they can actually, you know, feed themselves properly. You know, over a third of garment workers in the world are malnourished. You know, that's the people making our clothes. So if your value system tells you that you think that they deserve better, then that will drive you to your purchasing decisions to be more conscious. And, you know, at the end of the day, I think if we are people that are into organic food or, you know, clean environmental, you know, cleaning products in our households, we've generally taken the time to do the research. I know that I'm quite forensic on food labels. Mm-hmm. When I'm looking at what I buy, and I'm quite diligent in looking at the ingredients and where it's made and where it's come from. You know, really you need to apply that same rule to when you're purchasing fashion, because it's the same considerations. There's chemicals in our clothes, and our skin is the largest organ on our body, so we ingest what we wear. So if you care about what you eat in that same way, because the effect on your body or your children's bodies, then you should care about what you wear as well, because clothes are laced in chemicals. The leather can be treated with chromium 6. Our cotton is treated with pesticides and fertilizers. You know, the fashion industry is responsible for using over 25% of global pesticide and insecticide use. Huge volumes of chemicals go into what we wear. Azo have been shown to create amines which are carcinogenic. So, you know, I often find that people are very, very diligent in what they eat and what they purchase for their household food shopping, but also perhaps don't realise that there's those same sort of risks in the clothes that we wear. So I would say research is really key. And, yeah, as much as you research those labels, you should be researching your clothing labels. And a lot of brands now have a section on their website. They'll talk about their sustainability or their ethical sourcing initiatives, about their chemical management, about their environmental footprint, what they're doing to address that, about their commitments to perhaps certain ethical labour initiatives. So those that are doing things will have that on their website. And of course, you know, you always have to apply some sort of, it's hard for everyone to apply a level of thoroughness in terms of whether what you're hearing and what you're reading is resulting in positive impact. But certainly where there's brands saying nothing, that's a good reason to think that perhaps maybe nothing is being done. Because mm-hmm. in this day and age, you know, it's, if you're doing something, you want to be talking about it because you realise that there's so much interest. I would also advise looking at the fibres of what you wear and in terms of longevity and care. The garments at the lower price range tend to be made from textiles of lower quality that may not last the distance. And if you're somebody that's, you know, considered about what you're wearing, you usually want to buy for the long term, not the short term. So to move away from that sense of disposability and fast fashion and only wearing things once or twice, either because you don't think you need to wear it again and you're happy to buy it once, or because it stretches or falls out of shape because it's very cheap and not well made. If you start looking at those materials and how to care for them properly, you'll extend that life, the use of the garment, for much longer. So if it says to dry clean it. If it says to hand wash it. If you throw it into the machine and it shrinks or the colour runs, you've got no one to blame but yourself. Mm-hmm. And then it ends up at the bottom, you know, of the laundry basket. So the more you care for your clothes, the longer they'll give you. And if you create that sort of relationship with them and give them what they need, you'll have them with you for a lot longer. It's when we don't, we carelessly purchase, we impulse buy, we carelessly wash them without really considering what the instruction says. You know, I think those care labels the poor care label. It's there for a reason, and I think the majority of us have never, ever, ever thought to look at it because we're just so used to thinking, oh, yeah, everything could be thrown into the washing machine. Mm. In fact, that's not true, you know. And if you know you're never going to step foot into a dry cleaner or you've never hand washed in your life, then just don't buy that. Choose something else that will, you know, pass the distance. I think a lot of clothes end up at the bottom of the heap, never to see the light of day again because of the way that we've actually shortened their life.
Totally. I'm just thinking right now of a beautiful black cocktail dress in my wardrobe that was dry clean only, but the nearest dry cleaner is 300 kilometres where I live. I thought, oh, yeah, I can just gently hand wash that one, and it shrunk. And I'm so upset. I still haven't thrown it away or turned it into something else. It's still sitting in my wardrobe just because I can't bear to throw it. It was a beautiful dress, and I've totally ruined it by not following that care label. So that's a really good point that you've made there, and you've just totally reminded me of my mess up in the laundry.
Don't worry, you're not the only one. Mm. We've all been there and done it. And there's brands now that are trying to really push that point, and you know, Levi's has their care label, advising people also from an environmental perspective, you know, put it in cold water, not hot, and really trying to get people to you know, think, do you want this to last you a while? Then, you know, the way that you service your car or the way that you look after your washing machine, you see those as investments. Start seeing your clothes as investments. And when you see them as investments, you do take the time to look after them properly because you don't want to go out and buy a new vacuum or a new car every year. Mm. Likewise, if you want to keep a hold of that piece of clothing, you need to sort of practice that same mentality.
Totally. We need to invest in our vestments.
Yes, investments. Exactly.
Totally. Awesome. So looking ahead then, where do you see the fashion industry heading in the future? And I guess what do you think really needs to change for it to become truly sustainable and ethical?
Goodness, I could be here for days.
Sorry.
I think the industry is headed for greater transparency, definitely. We've seen over 90 brands and brand groups publish their factory lists at the moment, and the reason that's important is that NGOs on the ground, if they know where a brand is producing, they can sort of validate any claims that a brand is making and speak to the workers and make sure that, you know, they are being treated fairly. So that's kind of imperative. So transparency is definitely on the rise, and we're going to see more and more of that, the supply chains being published. I think that environmental considerations are really, really key, and is one of the biggest drivers of corporate initiatives at the moment for brands, whether they're moving to organic cotton rather than conventional cotton to eradicate that need for pesticides and insecticides, whether they're looking at, I mentioned before, the amount of trees. You know, over 100 million trees are lost to the fashion industry every year through cellulosics, which is fabrics that are used a lot by the supply chain, so your nylons and your rayons. It's quite incredible. Nobody really realises our clothes can come from trees. They come from tree pulp. And so there's initiatives now to only use sustainably harvested plantation sources rather than virgin native forests. Likewise, you know, leather sources and the chemical treatment is one of the hot topics of the industry as well. And so there's various programs. Greenpeace have their detox program where brands are signing up to eliminate hazardous chemicals because of, I mentioned before, the effect on ourselves, but also the effect on the workers. The amount of cancers and lung disease in tannery workers and cotton farmers is incredible. So, and then of course the environmental impact of those chemicals. A lot of facilities in the developing world where a lot of our garments are made do not have proper effluent and treatment facilities. So the chemicals are being washed into the rivers, which a lot of these facilities sit next to all of these wet processing facilities and tanneries, and that water in the river then gets used downstream a kilometre away as irrigation on food crops. So not only is it harming the workers in the facility themselves, but the general community who are relying on that water for their food, agricultural production, are also now suffering with diseases related to the industry. So the impact from chemicals is fourfold, and that's something. So I think we're going to see the cleaning, you know, furthering the cleaning up of the industry and elimination of chemicals, alternative textiles such as organics, the growth of the circular economy, which is simply about regenerating existing materials, so that they moving away from a linear approach, which is that take make model and dispose model, to how can we reuse what is usually considered waste and upcycle that, redevelop that into a new product. So we're keeping that generating, and it's not ending up in landfill. And so there's lots of investment in technology around the circular economy at the moment and trying to reuse existing materials. So I think that soon you might see that ourselves, the customers of today, will actually be sort of the fabric suppliers of the future, because what we take back to recycle to the shops, so the take back programs are happening more and more now as well, where you can go back into store and donate your unwanted items. We're going to be starting to be those fabric suppliers in the mills of the future, because they'll be using secondhand materials in their new products and selling it back to us as an upcycled garment. So yeah, lots of textile innovation and greater transparency. I think that the one thing is going to be much slower is development on worker rights and wages and conditions in factories. And I think that we need to be louder as a movement and as people that are conscious to call for greater standards for the people that are making our clothes. Across the board, the cheaper our clothes are, the less money the factories get. That means the less wages the workers get. So that's a really, really incredibly huge issue. And regardless also of whether you pay $100 for a shirt or $10 for a shirt, there's no guarantee, unless that brand is telling you what they're doing, there's no guarantee that those wages have taken a higher, so those workers have taken a higher wage. And that's why transparency is so important to find out. So yeah, it's going through lots of changes, and I think also brands that are making to order rather than the traditional model of just producing thousands of garments and hoping they sell. The speed to market that some brands can do now also allows them to respond quickly. So if a product's moving faster than another's, they'll cut production of the other one and just focus on the product that's actually popular and moving. And yeah, we're seeing a lot of other brands doing sort of short runs so that they're not overproducing and wasting textiles. So yeah, lots of changes. See, sorry, I could go for days.
That's okay. No, it sounds like there's some really great initiatives happening, but at the same time, there's still a lot more to, a lot more change needs to be made.
A lot.
Okay. So let's just sum it all up then, Melinda. And so for our listeners today who are keen to find out more about Fashion Revolution and join the cause and even take part in Fashion Revolution Week, which as you said is happening from the 24th to the 30th of April, where can they go to find out more?
They can head to our website, which is fashionrevolution.org. We're also on social media, and our accounts for Twitter and for Instagram is fash_rev_AUSNZ. We're also on Facebook, Fashion Revolution Day. We've got tons of resources on our website, whether you're wanting to talk about Fashion Revolution at your school, at your university, if you're a brand and you want to share the stories and take part, or you're a producer. And even we've got guides how to be a fashion revolutionary for just general fashion lovers and wearers, as I am. There's lots of information resources on the website for people to get involved, and documentaries. The True Cost is an incredible documentary. There's further screenings of that around the country again this year, or it's on Netflix. So I really encourage everyone to watch that film. It's quite an eye-opener, an incredible sort of insight if you've never even thought about where your clothes come from, who made them, how they're made. It's a really compelling film that's done really, really well. So there's screenings like that, and we've got a resources section on the website for people to find out more. But if they jump online and take part in Fashion Revolution Week, that's great, because we want them to ask the brands that they love who made their clothes and show that brand that they care, and hopefully they get a response. And if they do get a response, they should tag us so that we can see it, and thank that brand, because it's quite a new conversation in terms of the history of the industry, to be able to talk about these kind of issues in general. Traditionally, the brands, you know, haven't spoken so publicly about it. So it's a really big win if a brand responds. So make sure we see.
Oh, that's fantastic. So I'll pop the links below in the show notes too, so people can click straight through to all those resources. That would be great. Well, thank you so much, Melinda, for coming on Eco Chat today and opening our eyes to the fashion industry and how we can be a part of helping it to change for the better.
That's a pleasure. Thank you so much for having me, and thank you for sharing all of these tales and all of these pioneers in the industry. It's really exciting to hear everyone.
It sure is. Thanks again.
Thank you.
Well, there you have it. I hope you found this episode really informative. Melinda shared so many issues about the fashion industry with us, and she's also given you a few tips and ways that you can make a difference by following Fashion Revolution and asking your favorite brands who made your clothes. So I encourage you to follow Fashion Revolution and make a stand this Fashion Revolution week, which is, of course, from Monday the 24th of April. And by asking your favorite fashion brands who made your clothes, you'll be doing yet another thing to help make green mainstream. Thanks for listening to the EcoChat podcast. I'm Laura Trotter. If you enjoyed this episode, I'd love you to subscribe, share with your friends, and leave a review in iTunes. And if you're keen to continue the conversation, head on over to my website, lauratrotter.com, where you can also pick up your free copy of my e-guide, 11 Steps to Ecofy Your Home and Your Life. Catch you there.